Well, while the Clean Water Act cleaned up the Delaware River and polluted waters across the U.S., its future authority is uncertain. I spoke with Jim Murphy, Director of Legal Advocacy for the National Wildlife Federation, about the challenges the Clean Water Act faces. A case now before the Supreme Court challenges the scope of the act, Sackett v. EPA, and at issue is which bodies of water receive federal protection. The plaintiffs are a couple who bought a residential property in Idaho that's essentially a wetland, and they want to fill it in with sand and gravel. So what are they arguing?
So they're effectively arguing that this wetland is not protected by the Clean Water Act. And their argument is that the Clean Water Act is really supposed to be very limited in scope to kind of major bodies of water and wetland areas that immediately abut those. That is in plain contradiction with what Congress intended when it passed the Clean Water Act. Congress understood that water flows downhill and that small streams and wetlands on the upper reaches of watersheds play a hugely important role in protecting the health of downstream waters.
From your perspective, what's at stake if the plaintiffs do win?
I think what's at stake is whether the Clean Water Act will continue to be an effective law that protects our health and safety and our drinking water supplies, wildlife habitat. Wetlands are really, they're both the kidneys and the sponges of, you know, watersheds really almost operate like a system. In fact, they do operate like a system. What wetlands do is store water during storm events so you don't get flooding. Flooding creates pollution by scouring dirt and also by carrying pollutants from the surface into waterways. So they hold that water during times of precipitation and snowmelt. Then they also, you know, slowly release that water. And while they release that water, they also filter it and clean it. So wetlands really, they keep the water on the landscape and they allow it to be released slowly into streams and rivers. When you fill them in and pave them over, you lose all those really important functions in terms of keeping waters clean. And small streams do a lot of similar things. And they both provide an immense amount of habitat, you know, because one of the reasons the Clean Water Act was passed was to also protect the biological integrity of our waters.
This is a conservative court. It may likely go towards the plaintiff. So what would be the plan B to protect streams and wetlands?
Yeah, I think there's kind of three possible avenues. One, depending on what the ruling is, you know, hopefully the court leaves as much room for the current agencies to regulate as possible. You know, the real fix, I think, is with Congress. If the court rules that Congress did not intend for these waters to be protected, you know, obviously we think that's the wrong ruling, but unfortunately it would be the ruling of the court. Congress could go back and make very clear that these waters are waters that it intends to protect. You know, the third avenue is to continue to push states to step in and fill the void in the meantime. You know, the obvious downfall of that is some states, you know, don't have the money and resources to do that. A lot of states don't have the political will to do that. And then you also have the problem without a federal floor of protections that you can build on, you get situations where, because waterways are connected, one state that might really want to step up and protect its waters is still going to be receiving the pollution from its neighbor that may not be as concerned.
Besides this Supreme Court case, are there other challenges to the Clean Water Act's authority or scope happening right now?
You know, this is really the big one in the courts. You know, Section 401 of the Clean Water Act, which deals with the ability of states and tribes to certify whether federally permitted or licensed projects are complying with state water quality standards and keeping state standards clean. That is also the subject of some litigation right now. But the primary threat in the courts right now is this question about which waters are protected and which waters fall under the definition of, you know, waters of the United States.
What's still left to be done on clean water issues that either the act doesn't address or it doesn't go far enough?
You know, one hole that's always been there with the act is cleaning up what's called non-point source pollution. The act does a really good job of cleaning up the type of pollution that, you know, comes out of a pipe. But when it's pollution that just runs off the landscape, and there's a lot of pollution that runs off the landscape from rain events and, you know, snowmelt, et cetera, the act does not do a great job of that. And a lot of the pollutants that come off of that are nutrients like phosphorus and nitrogen. So a lot of the pollution problems we're seeing right now involve things like algal blooms, where there's too many nutrients coming into the water and it fuels the growth of harmful algae. And this is a problem that's going to get more severe with climate change, because we're seeing, you know, bigger and more intense storms, which means that there's going to be more runoff occurring because there's just more precipitation and more intense, you know, flooding, et cetera.
You're talking about runoff from agricultural activity or from cities.
Exactly. Yeah. And some of that is regulated as stormwater when it's kind of collected. You know, for instance, a suburban development that might have drainage systems that collect the water and put them in one place, you know, those are regulated, but they could be regulated, you know, a little better. And some of it is not regulated at all. Some of it is just, you know, water that's flowing off the landscape. I think the other real hole with the Clean Water Act right now is enforcement and implementation around frontline communities that have historically seen underinvestments in clean water infrastructure, that have seen a lot of the more harmful and polluting factories and industries being placed in their neighborhoods. You know, the efforts around investment and cleanup and enforcement in those communities has historically lagged behind other communities. And I think, you know, the Clean Water Act could really do more for those communities. And that's, I think, part, you know, there are changes to the Clean Water Act that could be made, I think, to prioritize those issues. But I also think part of that is ensuring that EPA and state agencies that are in charge of enforcement and implementation put in different priorities to ensure that they are really enforcing the Good Clean Water Act in a way that benefits those communities.
Jim Murphy is Director of Legal Advocacy for the National Wildlife Federation. There's more on the Clean Water Act at 50 and what's next at AlleghenyFront.org.